Welcome to the UCLA Anderson Fully Employed MBA Program Podcast, Drive Time. What are you going to do as you drive around Los Angeles? You're going to learn and listen and be engaged with some of the amazing human beings, the men and women who make FEMBA such a very, very, very special place. It's a Saturday, it's actually 1 o'clock, and I have a wonderful guest. My alumni guest today is Amber Jackson, graduate of the class of 2015. Who's been back on campus this morning. We actually spent the whole morning together at a women's breakfast. She was one of our alumni panelists. She is a senior manager in product marketing and distribution at the Walt Disney Company. And she's got a tremendously interesting career with lots of pivot points and really created from a commitment to have her life be great. That's a big part of her story. You're going to hear about that. And she's one of the more articulate thinkers that I've come across in my 14 years here at UCLA. I always love listening to Amber talk, and I got to listen to Amber speak a lot when she was here as a student because she was a big leader in the FEMBA Council, and then more importantly to me even was that she was the co-president of the FEMBassador team, which is our current alumni team, which is really the point of contact for anybody during the zero year, and she helped us really upgrade that. And I loved working with you because you are a very clear thinker. And you frame words and you frame frameworks and you articulate ideas. I'm setting you up now. You got to be good.
Yeah, I know. I'm like getting a little flustered right here.
Oh, my goodness.
This is great.
But we had a lot of conversations during the time that we worked together when you were a student. Yeah. And then I also got to hear kind of secondhand a lot of the, you really put yourself through some paces as you recreated your career while you were here. So we'll cover all of that today. So thank you for listening to this week's Drive Time. So, with no further ado, welcome, Amber.
Thank you for having me, Dylan. This is wonderful. I'm excited to be here and share some time with you, share my story.
Yeah, this is going to be good. So what should we start with? Let's do a quick backstory. So give people a little bit about you're from the East Coast. You came out to the West Coast. Tell people a little bit about your prior education and kind of your pre-FEMBA years.
Great. Well, I did my undergraduate at Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where I'm actually from originally. And after college, I followed a series of careers, really chasing after, you know, financial success and stability, which were things that I really craved, as I established my early working years. So I spent several years in the pharmaceutical industry at Johnson & Johnson and wanting to move out to California. So that was New Jersey. Then I wanted to come to California. I had some great friends out here that I wanted to develop relationships with. So I took a job consulting with KPMG, public accounting, so doing a lot of audit work for them. And another 3 years go by, recognized that that wasn't the life for me, that I made a transition to Warner Brothers. So my passion is around TV and entertaining people, the performing arts. And so I found this really great career in finance and auditing again for Warner Brothers Home Entertainment. And so another 3 years go by when I start to get itchy. And that was kind of this first moment of dawning of who am I, is that I need change, right? I need change every couple of years. I need new challenges. So I happen to have a couple of great conversations with a gentleman who's now my mentor and, you know, found myself wanting to make a big career transition out of finance into marketing and really believing and knowing that I needed to do that with an MBA. And so that's how I found my way to Anderson.
All right. So Johnson & Johnson Pharmaceuticals in New Jersey. Then I think I want to go to LA. Got some friends. Use that to come across the continent. KPMG, not a bad landing. Not a bad landing. Doing audit. Kind of transition out of audit into finance with Warner Brothers. And that leads us all up to FEMBA. So we're going to do this out of sequence. So we'll tell the FEMBA story. But so today's your first time back in 18 months?
18 months, yes.
So we're in the hallway this morning. We're getting ready for this women's breakfast. You know, like I'm all excited because Amber's going to be just a wonderful panelist. She's like,
oh my gosh,
I think I was having PTSD in the parking lot. I'm like, what are you talking about? But it's like, so it was a little bit of a shock to come back on campus. You had some of those.
It was a shock to be away for so long. I think that's what surprised me. I knew whenever we were finishing the last 6 months of the program, especially post-GAP, I'd had some older FEMBAs like Doug Longo who would use language like, you know, don't leave anything in the tank.
Okay.
Right? Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah, that sounds like Doug, yeah.
Finish hard. Don't leave anything in the tank. Put it all out there. I knew I would never go back for a PhD. This was my last collegiate experience.
Okay.
And so I finished strong, right? Like, I was involved. I was active. I was here until the final day. And, you know, post-graduation, Yeah, you just let out a really big exhale. It is a marathon running the FEMBA race. It takes a lot out of you. It's the most rapid growth I'd probably ever had in 3 years of my life in terms of change. But I needed to kind of court, I needed to readjust. I need to like figure out who am I post being that girl that works 80 hours a week. You got to go and start redeveloping relationships again that maybe didn't get the priority they needed during FEMBA, and rightfully so. But I really wanted to invest. I bought my first home. I had transitioned into a new career while I was in my 3rd year at FEMBA. And while I was delivering what I wanted to really just invest in that job, right? Like, okay, guys, no, you had a version of Amber. Here's who I can really be, right? And really like focus in developing the career and my brand, in my new role at Disney. So all of those things were just me wanting to, I loved what I had done with my time here at Anderson. I felt that I had left it all on the cutting room floor. I'd left it all out there. And so let me just go and spend some time rebuilding my identity and who I am outside of being a part-time student. And I think what's shocking is that it took me kind of 18 months to get there, right? And to figure out who that person is to now come back into Anderson and understand like how this relationship is going to continue, into the next phase of my life.
I love it. I love it. It was, because you really were, I mean, on the court. You were on the court. You were a president, co-president of FEMBA your 2nd year. And then it was your 3rd year that you were doing all the big career transition from Warner Brothers into the Disney.
Yes.
And you did a lot of reinventing of yourself to make that happen.
It was. Career transitioning is not hard. Like I respect that, people come into FEMBA and we would talk about, are you an explorer? Are you a transitioner? Are you looking to grow in your career? And I respect the challenges and all of that. I knew coming in that I wanted to transition out of a career in finance into marketing and that I wanted to stay in entertainment. It was a big part of why I chose a part-time in FEMBA versus going full-time because I had this great relationship with Warner. This is where I want to be at. I just want to work on a different floor. And so when I started, in year two of like doing that legwork of, finding the opportunity, preparing for it, interviewing, and not getting it, that was a lot. And then it became a.
And that was within Warner.
That was within Warner. It didn't happen. So there was an opportunity that I went after to, transition to a marketing role. And unfortunately, it wasn't my time. It wasn't for me, right? It wasn't where I was meant to be at. And so I then spent the next 18 or so months, well into my 3rd year, just interviewing and working with coaches like Susan to understand, okay, Amber, like, how are you positioning yourself? What's your brand, right? Recognizing that, like, learning that it's not about a hiring manager seeing something in me, but me putting it forward to them so they can get an easy yes, right? So, instead of asking, why don't they see this in me? Saying, how have I teed it up for them to see that I'm the obvious choice for this role, right? And what does that mean in terms of crafting my story, what my resume looks like? How am I using a cover letter to have, a conversation about who I am and tell my story when I'm not there, or whatnot. So it took a lot of like just going back and rethinking. You do a lot of networking and love the, Anderson Alumni Network, and so many people who shared time and coffee with me to tell me about their story, and how they did it until finally, we did find the right company, the right role, the right leadership team. And I've been here since, November of 2014, and I've flourished, right? It's been probably my most successful tenure that I've ever had in my career.
So November 2014, that would have been that's during
the end of Gap.
That's the end of the Global Access Program.
Yes.
That's the fall of your 3rd year. Wow, that's a lot of change at a pretty peak moment of FEMBA.
Yes, and then it was also unfortunately colored with a significant death in the family. One of my grandparents died right as we were finishing Gap. That I was very close to. So yeah, I remember there was a weekend where, we were up until 1 o'clock in the morning submitting, I think it was the first draft of our Gap business plan. We submitted it like on a Friday at 2 o'clock in the morning. I got an unfortunate call from home Saturday morning that I needed to go home to be with my family. And Disney called and made an offer Monday morning. And you're just like, what is going on? Like, all of this is happening at once within.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a crucible. That's a lot.
It was a lot. But
I mean, and polar opposites, like
yeah.
High and low.
Yeah, yeah. High, very deep low, a high again. And so, I'm lucky that all of that involved really great people. I had a really fantastic Gap team that I, to this day, adore, who really rallied and supported me, through that to keep it going and take it and step into me to give me the time away with my family that I needed. I had a really great recruiter that I was working with at Disney who did the same, and said, it was very honest with, hey, I'm not in a place to have this conversation right now. Can we have it in a week? Just give me this time to be with my family and, to go back home to Pittsburgh. And then I could be there wholly and be fully present with my family to get through that time and support them. And then come back and pick up the, fast paced life that was happening here in LA.
I love that. And this morning, this is totally out of sequence, but one of the things you said to our women's breakfast, we had a really big room full of really high quality future Fembo women this morning, but tell people a little bit about what you were saying about the power of no, because you just gave an example of telling the recruiter of Disney. So you got a company who's hot on the line, wants to get you, and you had to tell them, no, I need a week. And you were saying this morning, say some, if you don't mind.
I always, when I talk to women and really passionate about, women in the workplace and how we're thriving and succeeding, I've learned that we have to become more comfortable with the word no. And I don't think that women naturally, instinctively were comfortable with saying no, either receiving it or giving it. We want to be, nurturing, and, there are biases about, who we are, but they are true, right? That's who we kind of are, who we are, and wanting to satisfy and meet the needs of people around us, that you've got to learn as a woman, especially, to get comfortable with the word no, both with saying it, right? So when you're a femba, you're just going to have this explosion of opportunity of things and ways that you can spend your time. And there are ways that you have to spend it, like at work or in school and on classwork and group projects. And then you're going to have time where you can spend it at your discretion, right? Like this activity, this event, this speaker, and you're going to have friends, they have birthdays, and you've got to get comfortable saying no. You've got to be able to prioritize what's important, what moves you closer to your goal, to fully realizing what you want for your career, for yourself, for your relationships. On the flip side, you've also got to get used to hearing no. And if you're not hearing no in your life, you're probably not asking for enough. My very first week at Disney, a woman I worked for, my vice president, in a random conversation, but she said, if you don't ask, you don't get. And I thought that was so powerful, and it's such a succinct phrase, and it's one that's really resonated with me in the 2 years I've been here, is that if you don't ask for things, you don't get them. So if you're not hearing no, you're probably not asking, right? You're not asking for enough. So ask for more. And then once you start getting no, you kind of know, okay, this is the max that I can get out of this situation or at this time. And so, yes, it is definitely scary to have to go to a recruiter who's offering you the job that you've been working for 2 years to build to, at the company that you were like drooling to get to, and you know that she just wants you to be a quick yes so she can keep the ball rolling, to say, no, I am not in a place, in a mindset where I can accept a job offer. And really, if I recall the conversation, I framed it more as a, we could have this right now, and I fear that I might make a decision because I'm not in my right frame of mind. I don't want to be here in a career where I feel like I'm not being valued the way that I want to be valued. So rather than, making a rush decision at a time when I know I don't have a clear head, can you give me a week? And then I can come back to this with that clarity, and then we can tee this up to be a successful relationship, both for me and for Disney. And she really, really responded well to that.
We were also talking in the breakfast this morning just about, our think fearlessly, share success, drive change, that a way to talk about the third pillar driving change is this confidence that we earn through the sweat equity of investing in graduate education for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And, it came across in that moment. You said, I would counteroffer that the quality for you, the quality for me will all be better in a week.
Right.
And she could hear that. Mm-hmm. It's chicken and egg to me. Which comes first? Does the school bestow you the title of MBA and then you're confident, or do you get admitted and go through the hard slugging and slogging of getting the MBA to earn that confidence? But either way, it was there in that moment.
And it's really important, you know, how do you know in that moment? It's funny, I go back to, and I know I did at the time, I go back to that first quarter. I think the class is called like Management Organizations, the OB class or whatnot, mm-hmm. right? And whenever I was taking that class with Professor Shapiro, we had a particular lecture that was just around like negotiation, mm. right? And so going into, and negotiation is a word, a loaded word that, you know, people think is going to be adversarial, and it doesn't have to be. All it really means to me is when I go into a conversation and I'm going to ask someone or something of someone or vice versa, take the time to understand what's their point of view. What are they trying to get out of this conversation? Are they trying to get something from me? In which case, maybe the power is a little bit, you know, swayed to my side. Or am I trying to get something from them? Right. And so it's like understanding, how did you both come to this conversation? What were you both trying to get out of each other? Like doing that prep work then helps you to figure out, how do I execute the conversation that I want to have? And that's really what it was for me in that moment, was that, look, when you've got the offer, they want you. And you're like, okay, we're a little back in balance. Because prior to that, when you're interviewing, you want them. And you're just mm-hmm. trying to, you know, like reel them in and convince them that they want you.
Right.
I had an offer and I was like, oh no, we want each other. Right, which means that we want to find a way to come to a resolution, to come to a negotiation that makes both of us happy. And so because I think, you know, for me, like recognizing that that's what was happening in the situation, that's what gave me the confidence to be able to say, let's take this, you know, conversation and let's just delay it. I don't want to change it. I'm not, you know, countering anything. I just want time, just shift it to another time. So then we can both enter it and really think about what's best and how we optimize this relationship for both the company and for me.
You know, why do executives get paid a lot? Are they, you know, genetically better than people who are not executives? Of course not. You know, we're all made from the same DNA. In the course of our career, we either learn how to negotiate or we don't. And executives who have long, healthy careers, they get better at that. They're compensated for it. They have access to more resources. They can make a bigger impact in the world. And I think, you know, I love the Stephen Covey articulation of win-win outcomes. To mm-hmm. me, that's just a very simple way to say it. It's a win-lose outcome is quick and easy. Mm-hmm. I win, you lose, you win, I lose. Those are easy. It's slower to get to a win-win outcome. Mm-hmm. You asked for a week. It was a slower process. She didn't get to check the box that day in her to-do list, but look at this win-win outcome. Here, you told me earlier, this is one of the happiest jobs you've had. I mean, you're the mouse in the house and you're happy.
Yeah. And a win-win, I think another way to say that as well is like kind of grow the pot. Win-lose means that the space that we are negotiating is static. It is stagnant, right? Like there is a pie. It has a defined shape. It is a 9-inch round.
Right.
And so I have pieces, to just, I get less, right? Right? Like that's what win-lose is. It's saying that it's finite. It's defined. And so therefore, we're just trying to figure out how to draw the line. I think win-win, what I always go to is grow the pie, mm-hmm. right? I'm not asking for you to take less so that I can have more. What if I could find a solution that makes the pie bigger and that's where I get more from? I'm going to keep you whole with what you're getting, but let's find a solution that grows the pie so that we can both get what we want, right? And so I think that's definitely where my brain goes to. And a lot of it goes back to, I mean, it's shocking to me how many different pieces of what I learned at Anderson are still in my just daily vocabulary, right? Mm-hmm. In the daily way that I think and when I'm at work, working on projects, leading my team and, you know, coaching, you know, other women that I work with. It's so amazing to me. And I think that's probably the biggest surprise, because I don't think that 18 months post-undergrad, I was still talking about that education. I was using, right? Versus now I'm still talking about my MBA. It's an ongoing like difference maker in my life.
Ooh, I like that. I got to write that down. An ongoing difference maker. give me an example of an ongoing difference that you've seen lately. Cause that's fascinating to me. A year and a half mm-hmm. after walking across the stage.
Yeah. Still thinking about it. I think, you know, in addition to just like constantly thinking of how can we grow the pie, win-win and negotiations and partnerships. I think that I really try to focus a lot on people and relationship management. And so one of my last classes when I left Anderson was with Professor Ullman. And he talked about this framework, you know, of the three R's, right? So results, reputation, and relationship. And really, as you're building your personal brand and your executive presence, recognizing that those three R's work together, that results do not happen in a vacuum, but they happen within the context of relationships, and how that those relationships are working and how they do or don't add to the results allows your partners to then talk to your reputation. Right. And so I'm constantly like, you know, every day I just finished a very hard week at work where I was, you know, asking a couple of teams that I work with to deliver a really big project in a very short duration. Did we deliver it? Kind of. Right. So I checked the results. Right. We delivered it. We're going to go back and do round two. But I think when I left work yesterday, I was like, Amber, but what was the relationship around it? And it's like, were you the most pleasant person to work with all week? Probably not. Mm. So I might need to go do some relationship building next week, right? Like to bring this back into balance, because ultimately I want my reputation to not just be, you know, Amber is someone who gets something done, but Amber is someone that I like to work with. Mm-hmm. Right. And Amber is someone that, you know, can rally a team and will rally for me when I need her and her skill set, you know. And so I think about all of those things now. Whereas I think pre-MBA, I very much just focused on like results. What's the bullet point I could put on my resume? I don't focus on that as much anymore. I'm like, what's the relationships? I think it's Maya Angelou that said, you know, people will remember how, they won't remember what you said or what you did, but they'll remember how you made them feel.
Yeah,
right? That's how I feel and I think that's what those three R's are really getting at, and what I try to remember every day, especially as a leader, a manager of people now, versus earlier in my career. It's way more to me important about the relationships and the reputation, while also without sacrificing results.
Yeah, Professor Ullman, he used to be one of the professors who taught Leadership Foundations. Now he teaches more of the elective courses. He donated an hour of his time, I think two summers ago, and just, I went through my resume with him. He just listened to my life story, and he gave me one word. He said, "You're an integrator." Mm-hmm. He changed my life in an hour.
Yeah.
You know, like all of a sudden I'm like, that's a great, like for me, like that was a great descriptor that I couldn't come up with on my own that explained a lot of what I get energy from, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I just... another example of the wonderful faculty that you will meet here.
Yes.
And I love that. And the ongoing difference maker that it is. So results, reputation, and relationship. If you're driving, as you should be, or you're on the treadmill as you listen to the Drive Time podcast, the three R's were results, reputation, and relationship.
Yes.
Relationship management. Well, I love talking to you too, because we kind of geek out on big concepts. So you, in preparation for this podcast, you brought a really cool series of circles and lines. And I don't know if it'll come across in the podcast, but...
maybe we can post it, yeah.
Yeah, we can post that. And then, you know, a lot of what you told the women this morning in the audience was about rebranding and consciously rebranding and who are we before an MBA, who are we known to the marketplace, and how do we know ourselves?
Right.
And then who are we during, and then what do we want to get to afterwards? And you brought this – so just tell some people about, like, your journey, because if you're listening and you didn't quite get the shift – when Amber was here as a student, she was in finance at Warner Brothers, and at Disney now she's in marketing.
Oh yes.
And the first initiative or the first foray into the marketing job within Warner Brothers didn't pan out.
No.
But you got the domain that you wanted, marketing, and you got it at the even upgraded company.
I
choice.
Like to think so, yes.
I mean, for you, yeah, for your preference, for sure. Not to say Warner Brothers better than Disney, is to say for you where you wanted to be,
yes,
you wanted to be at Disney. But you had to, like you told me when we were prepping, you said, you know, when you came back to your friends and told them you didn't get a job offer, they sort of looked at you like you had two heads. What? Amber Jackson didn't get a job offer.
Yeah.
That had not been your pathway before. So you were having, you'd had maybe easier successes prior, and now you were really having to kind of stick with it.
Right. So for me, my journey, you know, and why I came to Anderson for an MBA was I found myself in this framework that we'll share. Really looks at kind of four different parts of what I call my work identity, right? So trying to understand, what do you do well versus what do you love? They may or may not be the same thing, versus what the world needs and makes it a better place. And the fourth framework is what the world will pay you for. So if you can visualize, there's these kind of like four intersecting, it looks like a very complicated Venn diagram. I found this framework when I was doing exploration, even before I realized I needed to get an MBA, because I was not feeling fulfillment from my career. And I really struggled with this idea that I spend, you know, half of my waking life in a place that isn't additive to who I am and what my identity was. So I found this framework and it really, really helped, because I found that where I was at pre-FEMBA was at this intersection of what I do well and what the world will pay me for, right? So I had a career in finance. I think very analytically, it lended, you know, my who I am innately lended myself to this career, but that's what it was. It was a career and it didn't really kind of intersect at all with making the world a better place, you know, what the world needed. And it certainly was not what I loved. It wasn't my passion. And so what happened was to get to the MBA, sometimes you need people in your life who can see your blind spots. And they're valuable people. They may not always give it to you in the nicest way, but they're telling you what you need to hear. And so I met someone while I was working at Warner, who is now a mentor, but at the time was just a casual interaction, who challenged like repeatedly, why are you in this career? What are you doing? Because he's like, I see this team and you're nothing like them. He's like, you're just your energy, you're creative. I mean, like I wear like, you know, bright orange and I mean, I look at photos of myself. I look like a clown at work because that's who I am. I'm like full makeup. Like I'm very artistic. Like I walk down the hallway. I sing musicals. Like that's me. I sing Broadway all the time. And so he was like, I see all of this of you, but you're in this career that doesn't celebrate any of that. Like, what are you doing? And so that was kind of my first aha moment.
You needed someone else to help point that out to you. You couldn't see it by yourself.
I couldn't see it by myself, even though I felt it. I couldn't bring it into focus mm-hmm. to see it and then to recognize that I could change it. Okay. Right. Because I felt like I had to keep going this career. I was a manager at Warner. Like, I'm moving up. I'm getting promoted. Like, life is good. But ultimately, like through that mentoring relationship, you know, in self-exploration and what color is your parachute, you know, I realized that I think I want a career in marketing, because I think there's a version of marketing that involves analytics that takes advantage of that part of me, but also that thinks creatively, where I also can be at. And I live, you know, across both worlds. And I think marketing is a career that I could love and bring that in and that celebrates these both parts of, you know, what I am and what I can do well. And so I went, you know, and explored, you know, UCLA and the other Southern California programs. I loved my undergraduate experience so much that I was immediately attracted to UCLA and all of the like involvement opportunities of activities and whatnot that I could do, that I knew that this was where I had to get it. And so there was a hump for me because I was an older FEMBA. So I started the program with 10 years of work experience. And for
a while. Not that much older, just a tiny nudge.
I am on the other side of the median, okay? you know, so just a tad bit older. But it was a hurdle for me because I recognize now that that wasn't a big deal, but I remember being in the place where I was like, but I've been building this career for 10 years. Why would I throw that away? And, you know, I remember, you know, a quote from C.S. Lewis that you are never too old to set another goal or dream a new dream. And I had to internalize that.
Ooh, do it again. Do it. She talks so fast. Do it again. That's a great quote.
You are never too old to set another goal or dream a new dream. C.S. Lewis.
Ooh, nice.
Yes. So I had to internalize that. I had to believe it for myself. And that's what let me start this path of being at Anderson, right? That I can be a 32-year-old student. I can like fully engage and be on campus all the time and the work will get done anyway, but I can still have these really rich life experiences and invest in these, you know, relationships and learning both in and out of the classroom. And that's really, you know, what brought me to here. And then we talked about the transition. It's not easy. It took me about 18 months from the Warner no to finding my current, you know, career at Disney, 18 months of interviewing, and it wasn't easy because a lot of the tools in the toolbox here at Anderson didn't really help in entertainment, right? Like on-campus recruiting is fantastic to transition into marketing if you want to work in consumer packaged goods, right? You know, so entertainment, it's a just-in-time, you know, type of hiring excuse me, process. So you've got to like wait for the right opportunity. And then the careers are so few and far between, and so much of the industry still doesn't know how to value an MBA.
Yeah, real estate and entertainment are still catching up.
Yeah, I talk to people in coaching, like when I interview, I hire interns whenever I'm able to. And when I talk to people who are still getting their MBA, you know, I tell them and they want a career in entertainment. I'm like, you know what? Recognize that you might be making an investment today that isn't going to pay out for you. It's going to pay out for the person that's going to come two behind you, right? Because a part of entertainment...
You're a pioneer.
You have to teach a lot of entertainment how to value an MBA, right? Because a lot of entertainment is you come in at the bottom and then you learn by doing over and over again. And then the promotions like kind of come, you know, over time. So, you know, it's hard. You've got to like find you've got to find who are the teams at a studio that value an MBA, because they don't all, and it's not, you know, unilateral across the industry either. So, you know, you're trying to either like step into the footpath that somebody else has stepped before, right? Like, okay, I happen to have a VP and a director who have MBA. So like, okay, there's a team, they value an MBA. But there's a lot of like, you know, education, right? Talking to marketing teams who don't have MBAs and saying, hey, this is how an MBA can add value to what you're doing in this, you know, area for, you know, theatrical marketing or promotions. And they may not believe you, but you warmed it up a little bit for the person that's coming after you.
So, you know, it's this rebranding, and you had some frameworks before school. You had you just put the effort in during school, and here you are now in a job of your dreams. And like you said beforehand, being a manager at Warner, that's no small. There are a lot of people in Middle America or wherever on the East Coast who'd love to have the California experience, who would love to come to California, not just wait tables or something, but actually have a position. So you were willing to let go of something good en route to something great.
Yeah, which is hard.
Yeah, it takes courage.
I don't know if you ever actually have read the book Good to Great, but I love the first sentence. Good is the enemy of great.
Yeah.
As soon as you believe that something is good enough, you stop striving for greatness. And it was hard. I mean, that was a question that I asked myself over and over again. Of like, Amber, you got a good thing. You got a real good thing. Why are you doing this?
And 10 years I built this good thing.
And when you keep getting no's, you're like, oh my goodness, maybe you shouldn't have tried to ruffle it. And then that just means you just got $100,000 of debt for what?
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, what if it doesn't pay? I mean, like, yeah, year in, you're like, wait, what if it doesn't pay off? Mm-hmm. Like, that's really scary, right? Mm-hmm. And that, you know, was a possibility, it felt like, for me for a really long time. And so, you ask yourself a lot of those challenging questions. Like, why are you trying to get happier than happy?
Am I greedy? Am I doubling down?
Exactly. Know? And so, but you have to believe, you have to trust in yourself that you have an innate ability and you have a right to be as happy as possible. You don't just have a right to be happy. You have a right to be as happy as possible. And, you know, the other quote that I wanted to share that, I mean, the C.S. Lewis about dreaming another dream and this quote from Diane Sawyer, you can go to my Instagram, guys. This is literally posted next to my monitor, and I see it at least a dozen times every day because I need to be reminded of it. And Diane Sawyer said, whatever you want in life, other people are going to want it too. Believe in yourself enough to accept the idea that you have an equal right to it. And that's powerful. It's a simple it's a simple phrase, it's a simple statement. But if to believe this wholly and wholeheartedly, I was really challenging for me. But that believing it is how I get, you know, from good to great, right? This is why I can get happier than happy, because I see other people at this level of like satisfaction and fulfillment in their career and happiness, you know, to go to work every day. And you've got to believe that you have a right to it as well, right? And you just have to keep working at it. And it always felt like I was, you know, looking for finding my career, this job was, it felt like finding a needle in a haystack. And what I would tell myself is that, Amber, yes, it's finding a needle in a haystack. And when you have found that needle, every hour that you spent searching for it will have been worth it. So do the work.
I love it. Do the work. And surround yourself with great people, I think is what I hear in your story. Oh, mentor who pointed it out to you.
Yes.
You know, these discoveries along the way. Which is, you know, part of the X factor value of not just getting an MBA, but getting an MBA at the hard to get into school, mm-hmm. at the high price tag school, at the rigorous, scary faculty school.
Yep.
So we got about 10 minutes left. So I got three things I want to cover. I want to cover Gap, because I want to hear about Gap. I want to hear any productivity tips you have for people. And then I want to hear about Hamilton, because we can't get out of here without lots of musicals. So,
wait, I can't just spend all 10 minutes on Hamilton?
Okay, I mean, it's your podcast. It's your podcast. These are guidelines, not rules.
Yes.
Guidelines, not rules. All right, so but you went to Northern Italy, did a little
I
wine.
Drank a lot of wine.
She drank a little vino. And she transformed the company's future. So let's tell people a little bit about your Global Access program.
So Gap was the one part when I started Femba that gave me anxiety.
We talked about that, yeah.
I knew I would have to do it because it's, you know, the thesis, it's a core part of the program. But it wasn't anything that I looked forward to. I didn't want to be a management consultant. It didn't look anything like something that I wanted to do with my career. And then this idea of like doing market research, like cold calling and bothering people who didn't ask to talk to me and like asking them for 30 minutes of their time, it just seemed huge. I was like, that is just not me. Like, that is not who I am. I'm not that kind of person. I don't engage you in a conversation unless you tell me that you want to talk to me, right?
Wow. Pre-Femba.
Pre-Femba, right? Yeah. And so I had a lot of anxiety about Gap when I started the program. And every time I would, you know, step through the program each quarter and I think about it, it would cause anxiety. But I trained myself to say, Amber, don't worry about it until you have to, right? Okay. So, you know, I could just like distract myself from it and say, you know what, don't pay tomorrow's debts today. Just like keep living your life. You're doing good. You'll figure it out. And then I went through Gap with a team from my core class, that my core section, that I had never worked with any of them before, but I really respected them, their contributions in the classroom. We had a nice like mix of personalities. We had a nice mix of like, you know, what people were doing, where they were in their careers. Like I was looking for a job. We had two people that were pretty stable in their career. And then we had two people who were like going through OCR. Mm. You do not want your Gap team to be like five people going through OCR, right? So we had this like very nice balance going on. And I think the other part that was anxiety inducing was that, you know, I really was humbled by this experience because these are real people, right? So these companies that are international and like, you know, come to the Gap program and want, you know, the support and the brains of like, you know, these MBA students. I was humbled and I respected that, you know, these are small companies, that this is a major investment to them. This isn't, you know, monopoly money. Mm-hmm. This is like real time. This is real resources. And so I wanted to make sure that I had a team and just for me that I would deliver a product that, you know, I wanted to put my name on. Mm. Right. You know, and that I felt was worthy of the investment that my Gap company was making in the program. And so luckily, I think what I love about Gap now is that those were all of the anxieties that I had going into it. And so now when I talk about my Anderson experience and highlight Gap as one of the highlights, I see just the radical transformation that it helped me go through. I love the program. I worked with a company based in Northern Italy. I love the gentleman that we were working with. I still, you know, hear from them at the holidays, like asking how we're doing.
Cool.
We're still like friends on Instagram, like liking each other's, you know, photos or sharing memories of photos whenever I was in Italy or they were here in the U.S. So you've built those really great relationships. The same with my Gap team. Having now that comfort to be able to like, you know, reach out to somebody, you know, unprovoked and just say, hey, I want to know you. I want to say something to you. And the confidence that what I have to say, you're probably going to want to hear. That I am someone who is worth knowing, you know, and like you should, you know, give me that 45 seconds of time to decide if we want to continue a conversation. A lot of that confidence building just happened in Gap because in Gap, you got to like rip the bandaid off. You just got to go after it if you're going to hit your requirement for the class.
I love it. I think, and my team is awesome. Shame on me that we didn't articulate the long-term what's in it for me of Gap. And that's for all of you listening on the podcast who are in a new amidst to Femba, you know, Gap is the biggest class, but it's not supposed to be scary. And it is supposed to be really, really challenging. The same way getting that promotion from, you know, director to VP, VP to president, it's not supposed to be impossible, and it's a big step.
Mm-hmm.
And the Gap program, the way it integrates the entire first half of your education in a real setting with real consequences,
right,
you know, but it's still a safe setting. And sometimes I think we focus on the challenge of GAP and we don't balance that out with the long-term value of GAP. And so that's just us as an institution, what we can, you know, what this podcast can do is help people frame it just a little differently. You know, you're going to survive it. You're going to grow from it.
And you're reminding me, actually, when you drew the parallelism just now between GAP and getting promoted, you're absolutely right. I was just promoted at Disney a couple of months ago. And not only was I promoted to, you know, a senior manager, but I was given more responsibility and more scope. And I knew I would get some more responsibility, but I got more than I was expecting. And like, I had that like humbling moment where I'm, you know, sitting with my VP and I'm like, "Ooh, girl, take a deep breath. Like, okay. I knew you were going to ask more of me. I didn't know you were going to ask that much more." And literally, as I mean, she sees it kind of like coming over my face of like, "What?" but she immediately like cuts into like, "Lean in, right? Lean in, Amber. Like, you are not doing this alone. You are being given this challenge because we know that you have the capacity to lead in this manner. Mm-hmm. So lean in. Who's that board of directors? Who are the people above, beside that, and that work for you that you can lean in and lean on to help you as you figure out how to meet and exceed the expectations in this new challenge?" GAP is the exact same way, right? So there was all of this anxiety. What I didn't know going in that I now know now, and I think we can speak to, is you lean in, right? So you lean on your fantastic professors like Eric Sussman, who was my GAP advisor. Ah. Who, yeah, I mean, he's fantastic. He's going to make you work hard. You're not going to mail it in with Professor Sussman, but he's going to make you work for it. But hey, he's there to support and meet you like right there every step of the way. You're going to lead to the side with your other members. You're going to have that, you know, everyone's going to say, "Is anybody looking forward to these interviews?" And you're all going to say no and realize you all have the same anxiety. Mm. And you're going to figure out how you help each other through it by buddying up, you know, listening to each other, taking turns. It may not be as efficient as it could be, but you're going to get there together. And so, yeah, it's the exact same. It's a really, really great analogy and parallelism you just drew about you lean in. When you hit those moments of anxiety, lean in. Lean in to people that have done it before, that are doing it with you, and then that's how it's going to move you through.
Well, I'm glad that helped articulate it, because that's part of my job is to help articulate a very complex opportunity to a very diverse student body. Yeah. We got people with a gazillion different goals who walk in the doors of FEMBA, and the challenge of Anderson is finding the part of Anderson that maps to what you want to accomplish.
Right.
The strength of Anderson is it's out there. The challenge of Anderson is, but how do I find it? You know, this is not a school that gives you a roadmap.
Right.
Do these 8 things and your life will turn out. It's way more sophisticated than that.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to bring it. And GAP, I think we have to give people the carrot that goes with the stick. That's the carrot sticks are even wrong. But we have to, you know, the what's in it for me is that these are challenges I want to give myself now.
Mm-hmm.
And my idea this season, I always have a newer idea or 10 each season, but this one is, you know, FEMBA is like promoting yourself in your career. You know, director to VP is a stair step jump. FEMBA, if you're a director walking in the door, FEMBA's like you just got promoted to VP, even though you haven't yet, but you're going to build all the skills during FEMBA such that when that promotion does show up, it's not such a big stair step. It's like, I've actually learned some of this already.
Well, whenever I coach people at work, just in everyday career management, you know, a lot of when I look at people who are junior and new in their career, they think that, you know, they perform as an analyst and then they get promoted as a senior analyst. And I'm like, no, you perform as an analyst and then you perform as a senior analyst. And right when they think you're going to go somewhere else, they give you a promotion to keep you. Right. The promotion comes after you've demonstrated the ability to excel at the next level.
Yeah.
Right. You don't get promoted into a role. You do the role and then the title catches up to you.
Yeah. Professor Svensson, who with Professor Foster, you know, the longtime leaders of GAP, he always said, you know, authority is always assumed. It's never granted.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, by the time you get the title, you've already been doing the work.
Exactly. Yeah. And because it's assumed and never granted, that means that you have the right, you can influence when it happens. Right. So it's when it's, you know, better to ask for forgiveness than permission.
Yeah.
Right. A large part of, you know, developing and moving my career is identifying the need, identifying the gap, and then when I can fill it, meet it, improve the process, you know, innovate the product, innovate the project, and then rally the people with you to deliver it before someone asked for it. Like, that's leadership. It's not someone says, "Amber, go lead." That is one form of leadership. Someone can tell you to go lead, but it can also be like, what's the need and how can I help you fill it? What's the problem you know, what's a challenge that you're having and how can I help you solve for it, right? And doing that without you having to tell me to go and solve for it. Like, that's another kind of leadership and finding those opportunities as well.
Oh, I love that. All right. So I said 10 minutes. We just used 8 of it on.
Oh, okay.
All right. So give us, you know, I want to give people some productivity hacks. This is my podcast 2.0 for 2017. So what's a couple of, you know, personal productivity or professional productivity tips and tricks that you're using these days?
Professional productivity tips and tricks. First off, and I say this to women because I've read articles that we particularly suffer from this, recognizing that the to-do list never is done.
To-do list
never gets done, right? So things move up, things move down. Occasionally they move off, but learn to be comfortable with that. I mean, I can get anxiety, and my boss laughs at me. I can get anxiety around my inbox and the number of unread emails. I went to business school. I'm a type A people. We went to like MBAs. Yes, of course.
I write it down right here. Look at this. I'm pulling this off my desk. This is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. This is how many were unread at the start of the day, at the end. Da, 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 da. And look at Friday. I had 0 unread emails yesterday, and I get like 3 little exclamation point stars for Dylan.
Number one, I love that you give yourself stars. I give myself gold stars on a calendar when I work out, and I can visualize how many times I worked out that month.
I am a geek. I am a geek, and I own my geekness.
Yes. Life hack number one, and somebody said it a little earlier, it goes along with, you know, recognizing that the to-do list is never done. Be kind to yourself, right? Be kind to yourself. And I am somebody, I am very hard on myself. I mean, when people are like, hey, Amber, can I offer you criticism? I'm like, please do. Please let me know which of the voices in my head to listen to versus which ones I should tell to shut up.
Meaning,
I've heard it all. Tell me what I should actually be focusing on. Right?
There's nothing you can tell me I haven't told myself.
Exactly, right? So that's like a really important hack to me. Recognizing that things are not going to get done. I like to color code my calendar. So if I look at my Outlook calendar, I color code it. So meetings or time on my calendar that I'm spending with my direct reports, it's one color. Meetings that are high priority, right? High visibility projects, they're with my senior leadership, get highlighted in red. Working time, which is just when I'm at my desk, like, you know, working on what I need to be delivering, that gets green. And then I use another color, yellow, for when I'm networking. So when I'm having coffees or, you know, going to women at Disney events, you know, or our Black, you know, resource group events, get the color yellow. And it helps me. It's not so much about a ratio of colors that I'm trying to keep. I'm just trying to make sure that all the colors are on the board. Because when I look at my calendar, I have a week view, like a work week view.
Right.
I like to see all of those colors in a 5-day view, right? They may not have the same. So if I am looking at a week and I'm like, ooh, there's not a lot of orange, that means I may not be supporting my team like I need to. I might need to think about how am I spending my time coaching and setting my team up for success. Or a lot of times I'll look and I don't have any yellow, which means I'm not out there meeting people. I'm not relationship building. Mm-hmm. I'm not working on my own development and, you know, figuring out what I need to work on. So that's great for me because rather than having to think about, have I done this? It's a color. Do I see yellow?
Yeah.
If I don't see a color, I'm like, oh, I think there might be a gap. When's the last time I saw yellow? It's been a month. Amber, we got to get some yellow back on it. Right now, there's a ton of yellow because it's the holidays and, you know, work dies down. But so I think that's another important hack to me to help me remember to keep balance of how, you know, I'm spending my day and spending my time.
And it's not all like perfection, 32%. It's just binary. Is yellow present? Yes, no. And it's an instant communication, visually communicated to yourself.
Yeah. And you need to remember, because you're going to learn so much while you're getting your MBA and you're going to, you become such a complex and dynamic worker, right? Like as you move up in your career, you know, you're not just an individual contributor. You're an individual contributor. You're still delivering things on your own, but you're also, you know, helping and supporting this team. You're going to learn things that you're going to really value. I mean, like for me, networking, informational interviews, meeting people is really important to me. It's also important to me to like, how am I giving back, right? So now that I've kind of realized a lot of what I wanted going into an MBA, I think a lot about, okay, Amber, like how are you turning around and like lending a hand to the person behind you, right? You know, and like, how are you making and prioritizing that time? So I feel like the more I work, the more things that I want to just focus my time on that I need help, right? Because otherwise I'll forget about this part of my identity and I won't nurture it. I won't indulge it like I need to. So that's why I really need that hack.
I like that. And being kind to yourself, it's even kind of related to that a little bit, the second point you made.
Yeah, there's going to be weeks where, like, you know, it's just that calendar is just way too red. You know, I'm sorry, I'm just in, like, I'm not supporting my team like I need to. I'm not networking. I'm just, like, producing work. And that's okay as well, right? Like, recognize that that's what it is. And so the following week, draw back. You know, I had one of those weeks this week where I was like, you know what, Amber, you did a little few too many, you know, 12-hour days. Cool. Recognize it. Not beating myself up for it. I'm okay. I knew going in. It's great when you know going in expectations. You knew going in what it was going to be. It was exactly what I thought it was going to be. And great. That means that next week I'm drinking a lot of cider.
There you go.
Even every day at 5 o'clock. I'm going to make sure I hit my workouts on the days that I want to. And I have a few more coffees at Starbucks than I normally do. That's okay. Just keep the balance, right? That's all you're ever striving for, is just like keeping balance.
One of my mentors says, and you find balance by getting out of balance.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
We're not born into balance. We have to get there. All right. So we've told, see, and I always thought you and I were friends because we love people and we're big conceptual, but now I know it's musicals. So I drive around listening to the Rent soundtrack with my 4-year-old son.
He's always so good. Yeah.
So, okay. So we got just a couple minutes. So what is your appreciation of Hamilton?
Oh, I am so excited. I just like gasp because I am so excited. I get to like answer this question. I love Hamilton. I was lucky enough that I got to see it right before kind of the craze happened. Like, it was popular. I saw it on Broadway, but like this kind of like manic craze really took off of it in 2016. And I saw it at the end of 2015. I love Hamilton because it is at its core a story that we love to hear and we love to tell, right? Somebody who is born without a lot, who, you know, good old fashioned American, like pull yourself up by your own bootstraps.
Abraham Lincoln, log cabin.
Totally, you know, go and make a name for yourself and, you know, write your own story, right? That we are the creators of our destiny. At its basic, I love that story. That is a great American story. Fantastic. And then it ends with a duel. Who doesn't love a good duel, right? You're like, this is awesome. I think why I love Hamilton the musical is that the discourse, the dialogue in our society today has just gone in such a way that we forget who we are, right? We think that immigrants look a certain way, and they don't. We forget that, you know, if you're not Native American, you're a descendant of an immigrant.
Right.
And so
even the Native Americans walked across like an ice bridge.
Exactly. To get here, right?
From Northern Asia, so.
So the way that the story of Hamilton is told in the musical is by people who don't look like Alexander Hamilton, right?
Yeah.
It's a diverse, multi-ethnic, multiracial cast, right? So that's great. So I'm telling a story that I know, right? Come up, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. I think I know what it's about because it's a bunch of, you know, older white guys who lived 200 years ago.
The founding fathers tended to have a lot of Caucasian representation.
Exactly. But we're gonna change what you think you know. We're going to tell it with brown faces, right?
Yeah.
And that automatically is going to make you think differently about this story.
Yeah.
The other part that I love that changes it is how we're going to tell the story. So if you love Broadway, I love Broadway. Like, I mean, I've seen Cats. I don't always get it, but I mean, all the way from Cats to Rent to Newark, like Fun Home. Like, I love musicals, but we're going to change it from being a traditional Broadway style musical. And we're going to instead tell this story with urban music, with hip hop, with rap, and with R&B. And that's what's real. You're just like, what? You're like, so wait, I'm listening to this story that I thought I knew about this guy who like grew up and came up during the American Revolution, made a name for himself as a lawyer, one of the founding fathers. He's on, I think, the $10 bill, right? Died in a duel. But now you want me to hear that story with brown faces, and you're going to tell it using music that's influenced by, like, Biggie, Tupac, Nas, and, like, Usher, and, like, you know, Ja Rule. That sounds crazy, and it doesn't sound like that should work, and it works flawlessly, and that's why I love Hamilton. You're gonna go and drive home and like listen to the soundtrack now. It's streaming on Amazon Music. Sorry for the plug.
Oh my goodness, I love it. Well, it's on the front of our brochure, Think in the Next.
Yes.
And like, what can we learn from the arts, right? Like, the challenge of the arts is to express something new. Express something newly. Express something in a way that people can hear that they haven't heard before, even if it's the same thing. You know, like, what is poetry but the distillation of observance.
Yeah. I love, you know, working in entertainment and film. It's so funny. We talk about, you know, movie studios don't actually, and, you know, film execs don't actually want to hear a new story. They
Not
want
really.
The same but different.
Yeah.
Right? Same but different. So that's why whenever you go in and you pitch a film, you don't go in and say, I've got this radical new idea that I want to pitch you. No, you pitch it. Well, it's Pretty Woman meets, you know, 50 Shades of Grey with a little bit of, you know, 28 Days in it. Like, that's what you do. You take same, what do you recognize, but different, right? Like, that's how you pitch films. That's how, you know, you structure going in. It's not a new idea. It's a little of this, it's a little of that, but with this twist, and that's the story that I'm about to pitch to you. So, you know, that's, so we like, we say that we like different, but we really like things that we can recognize and just flip it, right? Look at it in a different way through a different lens.
Which makes you wonder, you know, how, did they even pitch Hamilton at all? Because it wouldn't have worked if they pitched it in the traditional way.
Mm-hmm.
But for all of us, the world is changing too quickly.
Yes.
You know, if we think the same way, we won't, you know, we won't meet expectations, let alone exceed expectations of our customer set.
Right.
You know, and like, oh my goodness. Well, one of the things I love about the backdrop of being here in Los Angeles is that, you know, the arts are respected here. I mean, there's the whole negative archetype or stereotype that goes with LA, but art is happening here.
Art is happening here. Theater is happening here. If you haven't been, have you taken your family to the Broad yet? That's probably one of the best things that I've done this year was going to the Broad for the first time, because it's a museum that I believe is designed for interaction. Like, I went with friends, and it's one of those museums, I don't know if I'd ever want to go to the Broad alone.
Really? It's,
no, yeah, you want to experience it in a group. You want to experience it with other people. It's very playful with itself. Like, it knows that they're, like, and it's displayed and arranged in a way that it's meant to, please, take a selfie. You know what I mean? Like, that's okay. Like, that, it wants you to do that. It recognizes that that's our culture, is, like, taking photos. So it's got really cool, interesting, like, things on, you know, art on display that, yeah, you can take a selfie. It's just, I find it very, very interactive. And we were seeing things that you wanted to talk about, and it created a space. It's not like a quiet, stuffy museum. It created a space that wanted, that communicated that it wanted you to have those conversations. So I loved it.
Well, I read all about the architecture on the outside with that interesting facade that they created. I read when that, but I haven't been in yet, so I got to do that.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw Dean Olien, Judy Olien had Eli Broad on stage for her Dean's Distinguished Speaker Series 2 or 3 years ago.
I was here, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, The Art of Being Unreasonable was his book, and his story is, and now we got, he's putting his stamp, you know, the whole, you know, that metaphor in America that you go make your gazillions and you become a philanthropist, but in addition to that, I love what you said earlier in the podcast about you're being a mentor now. Like, we don't have to wait until we make it someday to make our, to pay it forward.
Right.
And I love how you said you're leaning in yourself, but you're also looking back and reaching out.
I was telling a woman earlier this morning that I met that the world needs to hear our stories.
And they need to hear them now. Not when we're old.
Yes.
In gray hair like me, but like
exactly, they need to hear them now. They need to hear that you can, you know, invest in a career and be successful at it and still put it aside to try for something even more, to get even, you know, to be greater than just good, right? And so they need to hear that story. They need to hear, you know, she was a, you know, single parent considering this. I'm like, people need to hear your story, right? Because it's what inspires them to want to go and dream bigger for themselves, right? I just watched Moana, the newest Disney movie, and I love it. And I told him, I'm like, don't get me wrong. Like, I love the story. I love her adventure. I love her spirit. I love that I now have another brown princess that I can show my nieces, right? And say, hey, guess what? You can dream too. There's power not only in hearing a message, but hearing it come from someone who looks like you, who thinks like you, who shares your story, right? So, yeah, I can hear, I mean, we can hear stories from anywhere and internalize them. It's a little easier, and it's always nice to hear it coming from someone who looks like me, who shares my experience, because I can just believe it that much more quickly. I can attach to it that much more strongly.
I love it. Well, okay, you got bonus minutes on this podcast, but LA is big and traffic is bad, so this is your drive time episode. So this has been Amber L. Jackson. I like that, like Samuel L. Jackson. Amber L. Jackson, FEMBA 2015, former Fembassador co-president, FEMBA council leader, life creator, career transitioner, currently with the Walt Disney Company with senior manager, product marketing and distribution. By the time you hear this podcast, God knows what her title will be. It's just So thank you so much, Amber, for your time.
Thanks, Dylan. It was great. Loved it.